From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Gentrification is a loaded word. It typically connotes a rise in property values in a traditionally low-income neighborhood. Wealthier people move in. Those who've lived there and are already struggling to pay bills from month to month can no longer afford to live there due to rising rents and property taxes. Affordable housing is an equally loaded and, according to the old school understanding of it, stigmatized term. It used to mean public housing and conjure images of an economically depressed neighborhood. But the conversation around affordable housing, how it contributes to the economic health of an area, what it actually means, and how policymakers, nonprofits, and developers can create more of it, that conversation is evolving. It was 2016 that the city of Wilmington and New Hanover County pulled together an ad hoc committee on affordable housing to conduct what they call a comprehensive examination of workforce affordable housing efforts, along with the demand for and supply of such housing, and recommend the best practices that would be most appropriate to improve and increase the stock of available workplace housing in the region. Today, we're going to hear about that committee's recommendations, where they are in the policy pipeline, and what you think about gentrification and affordable housing in the Cape Fear region. Taranya Ezell is the executive director of AMEZ, a local nonprofit that seeks to provide decent housing for low to moderate income families through housing programs, as well as education and human development. Taranya Ezell, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you.
Jody Wainio is the owner and a broker with Buyer's Choice Realty. She also served as the chair of the Wilmington, New Hanover County Affordable Housing Ad Hoc Committee. Jody Wainio, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Dave Spitrino is president of PBC Design and Build, a local custom home builder that focuses on residential real estate in and around Wilmington. He's also served on the Affordable Housing Ad Hoc Committee, and he is president of the Cape Fear Home Builders Association. Dave Spitrino, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. What does affordable housing mean to you? Does more than 30% of your income go for housing costs? Do you see the gentrification of a neighborhood as a negative thing or a positive development? Give us a call today and tell us about it. During this live Thursday discussion, you can reach us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Jody Wainio, chair of that Affordable Housing Ad Hoc Committee, what did we learn about the causes of the lack of affordable housing? They're unique causes, and they tend to vary from city to city. But what do we know about the Cape Fear region?
So I think one of the unique things about the Cape Fear region is that we can only grow 180 degrees because we sit right on the coast. So when we grow, we have to move further and further away from the city. That combined with our rising land costs and very quick economic growth with people moving from other parts of the country that have assets to be able to afford more house has driven the market up and up and up. And those who work here, our police officers, our teachers, our firefighters, and the like, their wages are not keeping up with the price of homes in the community.
And so what is that doing then to those folks?
So they're forced to move further out, which in effect creates traffic problems, which is one of the things that we are, any development that is looking at being created today is focusing on traffic issues. It also is not necessarily that much cheaper because now they have to maintain a car, they have to pay for gas, and they have to rely on something to get them to and from work.
Taranya Ezell of AMEZ, you have talked about the fact that there is this stigma associated with the idea of affordable housing. Where does that come from? What is that about? What do you think people are afraid of when we talk about creating more?
I think a lot of times people are afraid of what has been termed as NIMBYism, not in my backyard. They feel like affordable housing means, you know, something negative, has a very negative connotation. It's going to be something that's below or substandard type housing, something that's going to bring their property values down, from whether it's conversations that they have in the communities or things that they are seeing locally or regionally or even sometimes nationally. And I think that has, you know, caused a rift, you know, in certain communities in terms of, you know, seeing affordable housing, because technically we all really need affordable housing based on the statistical data that you have here, with the number of people that are paying well above 30% for housing costs.
How many people in this community pay above 30% for housing costs? Do we have numbers on that?
Yes, it's over 50%.
Over 50%. Yes. So, okay. Well, Dave Spitrino of PBC Design and Build, you sat on this Affordable Housing Ad Hoc Committee. First of all, as a developer, what is the role of developers in this, and why were you part of this committee?
Well, I think the committee was actually a fascinating makeup. You had nonprofit, you had professionals that are might be lawyers or architects, and then you had builders and developers. And everybody wants to find out, you know, who's the culprit, who's creating these more and more expensive outcomes. A lot of times it may have nothing to do with the individual. A lot of time it's market driven. I mean, we saw in a recession you could buy something for half price for a while. I think as a role from a developer standpoint, I can tell you from my perspective that others would never recognize is what goes into just getting the house to the point of a permit before you even get the land from something raw to something buildable. It's very expensive, and that's not getting cheaper, and it's actually getting worse. And as the community as a whole, the builders and developers aren't going to solve the problem, but they can certainly bring attention to where the pain points are and maybe get the collaboration and support from the community at large.
And we'll hear more about some of those ideas behind, you know, the way developers and policymakers can move forward on this, and nonprofits as well. But first of all, why did the city and county convene this ad hoc committee, Jody Wainio? Isn't everybody served by letting the economy do its thing? If you can't afford a penthouse in Manhattan, then you move to Brooklyn, to an affordable neighborhood, and you commute. I mean, that's been the story for years, hasn't it? How is affordable housing the responsibility of local government?
So I want to say it was 2015. We convened a mayor's roundtable on affordable housing that we had business leaders, corporations attend and talk about the challenges that they face with their employees coming to work on time, being able to access housing, and that it is an economic development issue that I think we have not really embraced as a community. When a company looks to expand and move to Wilmington, they're going to very much consider how much it's going to cost their employees to live there. And if they can't afford housing in the area that they're going to expand, they're not going to come here. The other challenge is when you have people who work in New Hanover County, they collect a check from New Hanover County, and then they drive to Leland to go to work. They're buying groceries in Leland. They're buying. They're going to entertainment in Leland. They're spending their money in another county. So they're earning from our county and spending it somewhere else.
So it really is
an economic development issue.
Now let's talk about gentrification, because this term always comes up when we talk about affordable housing. It, as you know, part of what's happening, that urban renewal sort of dynamic. What is gentrification in the first place? It's got such negative connotations. But Dave Spitrino, is it the necessary evolution of a neighborhood? And that word gentrification, it even comes from of gentle birth. And what does that mean?
Well, again, it's very easy for a older white male who has resources to not have the same concerns that someone else might have. But I have watched neighborhoods that I thought should improve, and they did, because the home sites were vacant, the land was underutilized, the area was obsolete, nobody wants to see anyone displaced. But as I've just expressed a number of times, I'm much more concerned in our community and wherever you are on this. The bigger challenge that I have as a citizen and as a taxpayer and somebody who is raising a family here is I am much more concerned about concentrated poverty. I am watching neighborhoods who have plenty of vacant land, have capacity to create housing that is affordable, and people will not locate in those areas even though they can afford it, even though it fits their needs. And I have personal experience with this with residents of ours who choose not to live there because they are afraid of the neighborhood. And that's a real problem.
They're afraid of the crime
in the neighborhood? They're afraid of the school system in that neighborhood. They're afraid of the lack of resources. They're afraid of the lack of attention. A lot of that is just due to the evolution of trying to create spaces that are not necessarily well managed, but is where people gravitate toward because they either can afford it or because they can either be invisible, neither of which are good for a community as a whole.
And I want to find out when we come back from this break that we're about to go to, where people who wind up getting displaced because a neighborhood, you know, a developer starts buying up properties, starts redeveloping lots, and people who can afford better housing start to move into those places. Where do they go? And Tarania Ezell will hear from you. When we come back, you're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're exploring affordable housing in the Cape Fear region, the role of gentrification. We have three local stakeholders with us today answering your questions. Have you found affordable housing in the region? Or do you spend more than 30% of your income on a place to live? You can call us during this live Thursday discussion at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're exploring what factors contribute to more affordable housing in a region and what an ad hoc committee on the subject convened by the City of Wilmington and New Hanover County is recommending. With us today to answer your questions, Tarania Ezell, Executive Director of AMEZ, a local nonprofit that helps people find and maintain decent housing, Dave Spitrino, President of PBC Design and Build, and a member of the Affordable Housing Ad Hoc Committee, and Jody Wainio, owner and broker for Buyers Only Realty and the chair of that Affordable Housing Committee. There are two ways to get your question to us on this Thursday. You can either call in at 910-343-1138 or you can email us at coastline@whqr.org. Just before we went to break, we started to get into the idea of gentrification a little bit and what that dynamic is. Just briefly, Tarania Ezell, what happens when a developer comes in, even with the best of intentions? I'm not vilifying anybody here, but this is just a question about what happens to the people who live in a neighborhood who can no longer afford to live there as property values rise. Where do they usually go?
They go out because, you know, as you were stating, if it gets to a point where it becomes unaffordable, you know, the tax base is going to increase. And there have been a lot of people who unfortunately have, you know, lost their homes with foreclosure through taxes and such. And so they find themselves having to move outside of said neighborhood. Some people are not able to recover as quickly, sometime not really at all. They find themselves going from a homeownership situation a lot of times to a rental situation that they never thought they would be in.
And I also want to hear from you a little bit later about your educational program that teaches people how to avoid foreclosure. That's one of the elements that you work with people on. Dave Spitrino of PBC Design and Build,
Are we splitting hairs when we talk about a developer? And let's use you as an example.
I'll tell you right now, you are splitting hairs because you're thinking about things in an area where, let's take Carolina Place, one of the first homes I lived in Carolina Place, and I was gladly referred to as the white guy. And all of my neighbors, for the most part, and I moved there because I could afford it. It was $65,000. There was enough improvements in the house. I qualified for the mortgage. I chose that location, but I also love the location. It was a great neighborhood, and I watched it gentrify. Now, who benefited there? My neighbors who owned their own home, they did very well. And they moved to different areas of town. They moved to better, newer homes. They had bought their home for $30,000 at one point, lived there for 20 years, and sold it for $230,000. It was the only mechanism that some of these folks had ever expected to see that kind of wealth. So on one hand, gentrification was actually a boon to them. Where the problem was, and I don't remember her name, but we called her Peanut Butter. That's what everyone called her. She rented across the street. And when her landlord's home became so valuable that he was like, hey, the $650 a month you're paying this, we're not taking that anymore. I'm going to sell this house. She moved out of the area. And that, you know, I don't know what happened to her, but she was a loser in that circumstance. I mean, she might have only been 10, but she was still her family lost. So gentrification can go both ways. As a community as a whole, the renter is going to lose. However, the property owner is going to win. I think what fascinates me about downtown is it's the only place in our community where you can have a $1 million home on one side of the street and four houses down, you can have a $125,000 home. You can't have that in Landfall. You can't have it in Wrightsville Beach. And you can't even have that in Monkey Junction to some extent.
We had an email from Kristen who claims to be a tenant of yours.
She's a great tenant. She's wonderful for the community, and she's done a lot for her community. She grew up in Wilmington, moved out of the area, and came back. And she's living in a home that was intended to be sold.
Well, let me tell you first what she says in the email. She writes, as a current good tenant, Dave Spitrino's for 2 years, just made me aware that my boyfriend and I, after they both just received a Distinguished Citizen Award. Okay, so our rent of $1,500 per month at his north side property will no longer suffice, and he would rather sell the property in April if we can't afford to purchase it now. In our neighborhood, the average median household income ranges between $16,000 and $30,000. Per capita income is about $12,000, and this house is in a persistent poverty-tracked area where most families are experiencing housing cost burden, just like us. When I first saw the house I now live in and inquired about purchasing it, Mr. Spitrino's price in his head at that time was $268,000, but he wanted it as a rental for at least a year for the capital gain.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So what's the question?
So
I'm a capitalist, so of course I want to see income. But let's take that site for a second and let's look at the bigger picture. What had happened if I had not built that home? That was a vacant site. It had been vacant since the 70s. Nothing was there. It has overgrown. It was in a family who owned it. The mother was incarcerated. She needed the money. I get a call from the son. That land was only paying taxes of $182 a year. And I just wrote a tax check on January 5th, and I just wrote a check for $1,800. And so the city just got, with no effort on their part, and I'm the one that paid for improvements and streetscape. So as a community, I'm doing my job. What I can't provide, though, is that house was never intended to be a long-term rental, and that was communicated on day one. So I believe I've been transparent in that approach.
So her question is how Mr. Spitrino feels his company is helping to increase affordable housing in the north side instead of only pushing rents higher and property values higher.
Well, let's take she's on the corner of 5th and Campbell. Let's take the corner of 6th and Campbell. Let's take one block away where a mirror image of her home was built at a lower price point with a lower rent, one block away on land that had also been vacant for now coming up on 40 years. So what has occurred because of the first step is an area of town that was almost that street for the most part between 4th and 7th of that street as recently as 4 years ago, 80% of that street was vacant. Now today, 40% of that street is vacant. And what's occurring is people are finding a neighborhood where they can either afford rents or afford own. And no one was displaced. I mean, if we're talking about gentrification, nobody had to move out. Nobody left. Anything that was torn down before I got there. These vacant home sites have now done two things. They've increased the value of the neighborhood because now homes around them are raised up in value. They have also taken vacant land that has not been or underutilized, and they've increased our tax base. So from a development standpoint, I mean, for no extra charge, I've just helped our city improve an area. And it's not my job necessarily to provide affordable housing. My job, as I look at it, is I need to provide housing. When there's a demand for affordable housing, I show up and go, how can I contribute? But if I can't make any money on it, guess what? I only can do so much.
We're learning about affordable housing in the Cape Fear region, how local stakeholders are trying to create more of it, what it does for the local economy. Answering your questions on this Thursday, Dave Spitrino, president of PBC Design and Build. He's also a member of an ad hoc affordable housing committee convened by the City of Wilmington and New Hanover County. Jody Wainio, owner and broker with Buyer's Choice Realty. She served as chair of that affordable housing committee. And Taranya Ezel, executive director of AMEZ, a local nonprofit that helps low to moderate income families find and maintain decent housing. You can ask your own question during the live discussion on this Thursday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or emailing us today at coastline@whqr.org. Darlene from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for letting me dial in. I do have a lot of respect for Dave and what he's done with the downtown area. I think he's very well respected in this community for making improvements to, like you said, vacant lots or homes that are just not habitable, as well as helping other people who own older homes just to renovate their homes. But I do think I sold real estate in Wilmington for a long time, and in the last boom, and I saw developers push land prices and builders push house prices. And sort of to your question, Rachel, or your comment earlier about is it the government's problem to help people have more affordable housing? I'm not sure that it's a government problem or a government that the government needs to provide a solution, but I think that in a community where we have such a disparity between income levels and housing levels and needs of affordability, I think that we have to somehow turn around and face the problem. We cannot just continue to say we want to push for higher values. I have a friend now looking for a property. And just to find a property that's $130,000 to $150,000 for a single individual is nearly impossible in this place. And just assume that you're a single individual with a child and that you're a teacher and that you just want to live alone. We don't have that kind of housing other than rentals. And I particularly, and that's why I like Dave's work, I particularly don't want to see Wilmington built with, 12, 15 major building apartment complexes.
Darlene, when you say that you think it's time that we turn around and face this issue and say we all need to do something about it, who are you talking about? The public conversation, especially since 2016 and this ad hoc committee was convened by the city and the county, the public conversation has been in the news. There was a recent legislative breakfast about this. Do you feel like there's an actor here who's not facing this, or are we still stuck in the mud? What needs to happen?
Well, I think it's very obvious that the rich don't want to get poor, and I think that there are stakeholders for whom we're speaking about today with the need for affordable housing. Certainly not my friend who has a very good job, but other people who may be house painters or jobs that are dependent upon climate, tourism, service level jobs. And I don't know that those people are represented well at the table, and I don't know all the members of this committee that Dave is on, but I was I'm involved. Well, just
so that's the voice you're saying is not part of this conversation right now, is the voice of the working class, the people who are struggling month to month.
How many minorities are at the table? Yeah, how many minorities
that's
are at the table?
That's a good question.
But it's not just a minority problem. I mean, my employees, my subcontractors, they, you know what they do? They drive to qualify. They just keep driving and driving away from Wilmington, increasing traffic, increasing expenses, increasing their child care costs till they can get to the point of qualifying. And in a community like ours, and the coast is tough, a house that I might build that costs, I don't know, let's say $300,000, 28% of that cost of that house is directly related to regulation. It's the Department of Insurance. It is my environmental requirements. It is my county requirement. It is my it's my county building inspector. And all of those things, even before I show up, I'm into the world of building by $100,000. And that has gone exponentially since the 70s and the 80s.
So you're saying the developer's challenge is to make the mathematical equation work.
Okay. So when I got the call, and I don't know what prompted the call for me to show up on the show, but we're doing a project where I want to build housing that's affordable downtown, because people keep saying is, Dave, look, I'm not 22 anymore. I don't want to live in a one room with a bunch of roommates and have a cable spool for a coffee table. I'm 50 something. I have a fixed income. I know exactly what my needs are. I just want to live someplace that's clean and it's safe and it's affordable and I'm not embarrassed to live there. And I'm saying, okay, I'll try that. This week, I'm getting all my TRC comments back from the city. And you know what they do? They're doing all these comments from our technical review committee, all well-meaning, all regulatory. Every single comment has either increased the cost of my project through no fault of my own, or it has reduced the value of my project. And it's not just the city of Wilmington, it's DOT or it's street and traffic and all of those things. Guess what? I'm still going to build that building. But if I was trying to get rents somewhere between $700 and $750, just the emails this week have increased those rents. Probably doesn't sound like a lot, but that has probably increased the rents $30 a month. That is atrocious. If I'm trying to go to a certain goal and I can't get there because I didn't create that circumstance, it's just something I have to listen to.
So let me ask you this. On that specific project, are those comments from the technical review committee things that—
They're petty. They're petty and they're aggravating. But guess what? Dave, well, what if somebody can't get out of their parking space and they get hit by a car? Well, there's only 12 cars. So why am I having to do this when I'm not required to provide parking anyway and you're taking away from me those spaces? So I recognize the value, but let's look at the big picture. If Dave's trying to provide affordable housing or housing that's affordable, and we're increasing the cost because we have a book of regulations, some of which are from the 60s, none of those things are going to be helpful to us in the long term if we're trying to reach a goal.
And I do want to get into some of the zoning regulations that might help with the creation of affordable housing. But first, this email from Jim, he asks, is there any effort to try and build racially diverse communities? And that question comes after, Jim writes, after decades of unfair housing practices against the African American community, is anything going to be done to correct this gross inequity? So are there efforts out there? And this is for anybody, Jody Wainio, Taranya Ezel, in terms of looking at the ethnicity of communities and maybe helping minorities.
I think it's all price driven, mm-hmm. And I think that
I disagree. I mean, it's not.
Well, let Jody Wainio complete her thought.
Dave's getting excited here.
Yeah,
I think that as a committee, we looked at affordability and how we could increase numbers of affordable units and what are things we could do in the community. That affects all ethnic groups. And I, as a realtor, we are a little bit hesitant to even call out one ethnic group over another because we honor fair housing. So from my perspective, we looked at it from all of the people in our community who only make so much money. And that falls into all ethnic groups.
Right. And we have a call. Churchill from Wilmington. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, happy day. And as always, I'm enjoying your show.
Thank you. In
perusing the news, I read a lot about how giant companies like BlackRock and Carlyle Group are all over the country buying up massive numbers of single-family homes and duplexes and townhouses and developing rental properties all over the place. And generally speaking, renting those out to people with, you know, good credit histories and above the median income groups. And I wonder, you know, in the advent of people like Newland Group moving into Wilmington and doing so much around here, and so much of what we see is obviously upper tier rental housing popping up all over the place. Are we seeing Carlisle and BlackRock and people like that here to the extent that they're driving real estate prices and that rental market into price ranges which are not available to working stips?
Well, Dave Spitrino, thanks so much for your question.
Yeah, we're not seeing the national. We're not seeing BlackRock and Carlisle. And I follow those same articles, and I read those same articles. You're seeing those highly concentrated in your largest areas, Los Angeles, New York, Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia, even in parts of Atlanta. Wilmington still enjoys being a tertiary market, good or bad. You know, we're glad to have a Whole Foods or a Trader Joe's or whatever is great to have in our community. But the reality is we're still a small market, and it's hard to really – and we're also at the end of the road. So no, we're not on the way to anywhere. So while Charlotte might see that type of predatory approach to housing – the predatory approach you're seeing here is still much more to smaller firms and smaller outfits.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about how more or less affordable housing affects the economy of a region. We're learning about local efforts to increase the volume of affordable housing in southeastern North Carolina. Three local experts, stakeholders, are taking your questions on this Thursday. After this break, you'll have one more segment to get your question in. You can call us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilbert for Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're learning today about how the availability of affordable housing affects a regional economy, what best practices from cities that have successfully created more of it. We're going to hear about some of those in just a minute, and what some of the roadblocks are to moving forward with creating more affordable housing. Our guests today include Jody Wainio. She's the chair of a recently convened ad hoc committee on affordable housing for the city of Wilmington and New Hanover County. Dave Spitrino also served on that committee. He's the president of PBC Design and Build. And Tarania Ezel is the executive director of AMEZ, a local nonprofit that provides guidance and resources and education for low to moderate income people to get into decent housing. And they're taking your questions on this Thursday. This is the last segment, so you have just a few more minutes to get your question in during this live Thursday edition. You can either call us at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And during the break, Tarania Ezel with AMEZ, you were saying that one of the challenges for you is finding affordable land to create. What does AMEZ do with land that it buys? You're also a developer.
Yes. So we do construct new houses for first-time home buyers on the lots that we receive, and either we buy lots outright with funding that we receive from HUD through the city of Wilmington, or we we also rehab existing homes for first-time home buyers as well. In terms of the lots that we purchase or receive, the size of the lot is going to dictate the size of the house that we build. And so what we are doing right now, we're actually building on Gray Street. And once those properties have, once we've completed those properties, we're actually looking for additional property in which to construct houses on. But that has been challenging, trying to find new lots that are affordable, because whatever costs we can save on the front end, you know, we want to be able to pass that on to the person that's going to be purchasing the house.
Is there an average purchase price that you're looking for when it comes to a lot? Is there a range?
As low as we can get it. As low as we can get it. You know, someone can donate land and, you know, that type of thing. But we try to get it as low as possible because we've got to put that into, you know, our construction cost. And so one thing that we're looking for is parcels of land that are large enough where we can build several houses or a community of houses so that we can be more impactful here in the city of Wilmington in terms of affordable housing.
And Dave Spitrino of PBC Design and Build, you've talked about this mathematical equation, how when your costs go up, that means that rents or the purchase price of a home is going to have to go up. And you've expressed particular frustration with water and sewer connections.
Well, I think that's one component is I love infill. I mean, my salary doesn't come from downtown infill housing. I don't golf. I don't play basketball. I have really zero hobbies of any sort. But I love watching neighborhoods, especially these vacant sites, be redeveloped. But the burden of connecting to utilities on a home site that I might purchase for $20,000 and an additional $7,000, $8,000, $12,000 to connect water and sewer when I already have water on the street and I already have sewer on the street, but those connections are – it's the same – or in most cases, it's more than I'm paying in landfall or than I'm paying in other areas. I recognize that it's not.
Why is it so expensive?
Well, I've got tired infrastructure. The stuff in landfall, the oldest stuff in landfall is still only 30 years old. But the oldest stuff in downtown Wilmington, it's 100 years old. And it's in horrible shape. And I can understand, you know, the utility authority doesn't need to, I mean, the developer and Newland is doing a great job and all their stuff is brand new and I can tap on for $4,000. So that's one component that is driving a cost of a house up. And no one says, Dave, oh my gosh, you paid extra to get water and sewer to my house. I will pay you extra. Now, if I put in the stainless appliances or some hardwood floors, they'll stroke a check. But no one says, oh my gosh, I have a brand new water line. Of course you've got water, but they're not going to pay me, you know, four figures for it.
And this is one of the recommendations that actually came out of this ad hoc affordable housing committee, encouraging Cape Fear Public Utility Authority to defer fees, offer payment plans, rebates for affordable housing developers. We've already watched New Hanover County agree to invest in water and sewer infrastructure, you know, up that 421 corridor. And the whole idea there has been regional economic development and the creation of this industrial corridor, making it more conducive for businesses to move in there. Are there any similar initiatives or efforts along the lines of residential?
So the county has approved assisting the Habitat for Humanity in the development of a piece of property off of Gordon Road recently, then that money will help to bring water and sewer and infrastructure to those properties.
I believe CFPUA hears us. They all agree. CFPUA isn't like this enemy. CFPUA, again, they hear me because I am very vocal, obviously. They understand the concern. I think they're going to figure those things out. I mean, they want to be part of the solution. But I think as a community as a whole, if we want to know whether or not we're going to see this affordable housing problem start to work in our favor, we're watching both the city and we're watching the county write their new ordinances. And when those new ordinances come out, I'll tell you immediately whether this is going to get solved or whether anyone's really interested in solving that problem who's making decisions. It's going to come down to really two easy things. Are we okay with more density and are we okay with more height? And if we're not okay with those two things that came in really after the Fair Housing Act to avoid minorities and poor people from showing up places where the rich people or the people who didn't want that ilk or type of person being, very malign policies that came from the 60s and 70s, some of those are still in place. And the sooner we can stop worrying about that and start focusing on getting comfortable with those things, I think we'll all be better off.
One of the recommendations that came out of this committee was creating a permanent committee to deal with the evolution of around best practices and having a group of people who are stakeholders who are constantly on the issue. Jody Wainio, where is that effort?
That's a very good question. We have yet to have the city and county leadership come together to discuss where we go from here.
When did you present your findings, and when was the ad hoc?
April of 2017, the findings were presented to both groups.
So it's been just not quite a year since that happened. So the committee has been disbanded. And what are you finding when you try to get the leaders to convene?
So in a sense, my hands are tied, but it doesn't mean that I'm not trying to encourage those folks who are in charge to come together. And I'm working on that, but it's a slow process. I think the city is well positioned to want to sit to the table and do that. They actually put $400,000 in their budget for this year to go towards affordable housing.
In what way?
It's a variety of ways for that budget. And that's some of that is also anticipating that the federal budget is going to be cut with regard to those funds that have been used up until this point for affordable units for AMEZ and some of the other nonprofits.
And what kind of movement are you seeing with New Hanover County?
None, actually. And well, the only thing that I've seen is the money that they've put towards the Habitat community off of Gordon Road. I think that the political climate in the county, at least for the majority, is that they don't feel that that's a government's place to provide. One person called it subsidized housing, and that's not what we're talking about at all. So I'm not sure what needs to happen. I hope that
so there's still this perception that when we're talking about affordable housing, we're talking about public housing of one kind or another.
Yes.
And I don't know that. I mean, again, I rely on our government. I rely on the support that we get from our government. I believe in that the government should be providing infrastructure and economic development are all things that fall in. But I've come to the realization, and while I'm one small component, the stuff that we're experimenting with, it's either going to work or it isn't, but it's not. Nothing is currently set up for me to be successful in trying this. And I'm going to be successful, but I don't know that I could scale it. And I don't know that anyone else would put their mind that far into it unless it's profitable.
And so Chaz from Wilmington called in and asked what policy initiatives exist in our region to subsidize affordable housing so builders don't have to eat the costs. And Dave Spitrino of PPC Design and Build, what you're saying right now is there isn't much.
I have no expectation that our county commissioners and our city council, while even well-intentioned, they're not going to come up with something that's going to be able to move the needle enough unless they look at every component and try to figure out, is what we're about to ask of these developers, is it going to help him keep his costs down or is it going to increase his cost? And after years and years and years of trying to do even the simplest projects, over that time, no one has ever said, Dave, we're going to make it a little easier on you. We're going to make it faster. We're going to make it cheaper, and we're going to make it less stringent. That has not been the case. It's not by that there's an enemy out there. It's just that as a community, we are trying to make sure that we can program a desirable outcome because there are some bad actors who are going to create junk, and that's not good for anybody.
So the challenge is with the findings of the committee is the first step was to create this permanent committee so that we could look to implementing the recommendations. One answer is not going to fix the problem. One recommendation is not going to fix it.
And so there's no point in even going after any of these recommendations until you have that permanent.
Well, and I look at it as we were a design team. Now you need an implementation team to put some of these visions and these things into place. And without that committee or without that permanent, if you look at other areas in our state, Asheville, Durham, Raleigh, Charlotte, they all have permanent committees with stakeholders that sit around the table from all facets, even people who live in the homes that we are trying to create that sit on those committees. And without that, I don't know that how we move forward. And we're not talking about it costing any money. You know, I think there's a hesitance to to generate more tax.
One of those recommendations is to create a permanent staff position, and that person would be the liaison, I guess, between government and the committee. So that's a cost.
Yeah, but we don't we don't have to have that without the committee. With the committee, the committee is the first place. Obviously, having staff and someone that owns it is going to make it that much more powerful. But as a start, let's just put the committee in place and let people come back to the table and figure out how we move forward.
We had a call. John from Charleston, South Carolina, says he's driving through to drop off film equipment. Does Wilmington have zoning laws like Charleston of not building a home less than 500 square feet? Can there be a tiny housing market? There is not one in downtown Charleston. Has this come up? All of you are smiling. And Taranya Ezell, what do you know about the tiny housing market?
It's great for certain areas. It is something that actually I looked into when there was a tiny house conference back last year in Pink Hill, North Carolina. And so as an affordable housing developer, it's something that we've looked into, nothing that we've done in-depth research in. But I think, you know, that there's a possibility, you know, as soon as you can meet, you know, whatever, you know, housing codes and that type of thing. But I think there's a possibility. I really do.
Now, we said earlier in the discussion, Taranya, that you would just give us a few tips when you counsel people on foreclosure prevention.
Yes.
What are some of the things that you tell people to do?
Well, we've got a great housing manager, Ruth, with AMEZ Housing, and I, too, assist with the foreclosure counseling. So what we do is we look at the information that they provide us when we do intake and try to see what things that we can make suggestions on, because when you're dealing with that foreclosure prevention, you've got to make some serious changes because these are a lot of people who come into the office. Probably about 80% of them, you know, they have jobs or they've had jobs and they weren't in a position where they had to start to cut back. But now you're looking at having to do more budgeting, you know, more savings and that type of thing. So we're looking at that to see if they can, you know, help to reduce some of their expenses, help to reduce their costs so that they're in a better position to move forward.
That makes sense. We only have a few minutes left. I'd like to hear from each of you what the one thing is. If you could wave a magic wand, you don't have to build consensus. You can just have this one thing that's going to move the affordable housing ball down the field. What is that one thing, Dave Spitrino?
I wish we have these regulations. We have a lot of oversight, and I'm not denying that there's not a value there. But I wish that when we're looking at new projects, we actually try to put a value on what happens if that project doesn't get built. What happens if people can't afford to live there? What if people have to drive further to qualify? So it would be, I have all these consultants and all these people who tell me what I got to do to build a project. But if that project doesn't get built, who's the person that says that's bad that we don't have the density or the volume of the housing?
Fewer regulations and
fewer regulations. Recognize what happens if we don't do this. What's the downside if we don't solve this problem?
Jody Wainio.
I'm going to stick with my permanent committee.
You want the permanent housing, affordable housing
committee. I really would love for the city and county to appoint the permanent committee.
Taranya Ezell, your one thing.
Affordable land cost.
Affordable land costs. There it is. We did have a statement from Paul Stavovi, who is the executive director of Cape Fear Community Land Trust. Sorry that he's ill today. We are going to have a part two because we couldn't possibly fit all the voices into this discussion that we needed. So tune in next week for Affordable Housing Part Two, and we'll hear from Paul Stavovi as well. That's this edition of Coastline. Taranya Ezell, Jody Wainio, Dave Spitrino, thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Today's chief engineer and production assistant, Caitlin Hanrahan. Caroline DeVries is our webmaster. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org. Get the podcast or find it on the WHQR app. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.